we take these people and we show them stories. We show them the grit. We show them the failures, the victories, the hardships, the eventual successful outcome, the messiness of it all. And it's so beautiful because they're not trying to be persuaded of anything. They're just witnessing someone else's big story. And that is a portal. Eric, if you can walk people through that portal of seeing it being accomplished in a profound way by others, suddenly everything's on the table. Everything's possible. And so that would be my quick answer, is you take people out of themselves, out of their habitual selves, so that they can access all of the stuff that's latent in all of us. I firmly believe, my house view, is that we are 50% as good as we could be, all human beings. And so there's this journey to the other half of ourselves that I find so compelling, because that's actually where a whole lot of goodness and success and achievement and healing and renewal, that's where all that stuff lies.
Welcome to this week's expansive podcast. Really great to have you with us again. And today we start a brand new series called Friends of the Expansive. We've met some incredible people on our journey, but Eric and I have handpicked two very specific individuals to join us as Friends of the Expansive to bring in their perspective of the subjects we talk about, tell us what's latest and greatest in their worlds. And they've obliged with gratitude from our side. We're so happy that they have obliged. But before I introduce our guests, just checking in with my co-pilot, Eric. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, brother. Yeah, I'm good. And you?
I'm good, thanks. Leches, you sound excited to be here, Eric. Wonderful to have you along on this ride.
Yeah, listen, I'm very excited. I'm happy that we're finally recording, you know, since it just took us 18 minutes to get your mic sorted and all the enthusiasm has waned. Like, I saw Rowan kind of falling asleep. He thought he was coming onto a very professional podcast yesterday. Sorry, Rowan. I have to apologize.
Well, thanks for bringing our dirty washing into the pod itself, Eric. So much for being professional and acting like nothing had happened. Welcome, Rowan. Wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm already appreciating the quality of the banter in this call. I think this bodes very well for the remainder of our conversation. Clearly, all pretenses of professionalism are out the window. So let's get talking, shall we?
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Get all this sort of like fluff out the way. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. Look, we are always enthralled by change, and Eric and I have always often spoken about the fact that we could have changed our podcast name to Masters of Change, and really, the concept that we want to dive into today is not so much about the what, but the how. How do you change? How do you transform? How do you move through this process? And this has always been a golden thread in everything that we've always done. But there are very few people around the world that are working at this level of what Rowan is doing when it comes to transformation and when it comes to change. Now, Eric and I also bat right up there, but Rowan's up to some really incredible things at the moment, and we wanted to tap into that wisdom and figure out what's going on there. So, Rowan, quick brief for the listeners who haven't heard from you before, because you have been on the pod once before, just quickly tell us who you are very quickly, and then we can dive into where you're at and what you're up to.
Thank you both. Yes, I am a business romantic, I suppose. It's not a phrase that I've used a lot, but it feels very apt. I have a very romantic and optimistic view of what businesses are becoming. And I think when great, remarkable, new style businesses aggregate in quantities all over the world, I really do believe that society is going to start changing quickly, because the power that business has is considerable. And I think it is massively under leveraged right now. So what I'm doing in New York is helping a very, very large financial services organization change from one business approach to another. And that sounds quite simple, but across 70 plus thousand employees, it's a very tricky proposition. And I think maybe a starter point would be to consider change with a small c and a big c, or lowercase c or uppercase c, because people throw the lowercase c of change around easily. You know, we're going to change this, we're going to change that. But when you get into change and you start seeing it through the lens of the big C, the more profound version of the word, it's a very, very tricky thing, because fundamentally, systems don't like to change. Change is feared. And when you're in the people development space like I am, anytime you see a problem, just look for where the fear is, and you'll find the genesis of what's going wrong. And so, you know, change is a very tricky thing, but I think it's a very cool thing, because what change is fundamentally is renewal. And renewal has so much latent juiciness in it, you know, new possibilities, new patterns, new potentials, new perspectives. It's just so interesting if you can get past the fear and into the more juicy version of the word change. So that's where I'm sitting right now. I'm seeing a lot of change in businesses. I would say it is change that is, it's hard won, because business patterns are very deeply established and they don't change quickly.
Yeah. It's like the very system itself is based on low levels of change. Like economies of scale doesn't really want change, because it's trying to bring efficiencies to an existing system with micro changes along the way. And as we go through this transformation, I always find it incredibly challenging working with organizations with entrenched ideologies around profitability over everything else, because pretty much every business in the world is right now, to now think about things in alternate ways. It really requires self-awareness, and then to actually think about a system that doesn't want self-awareness. That's such a hard marriage to bring together. What are your thoughts around that? How do you overcome that?
You know, it's interesting being in New York at the moment, because the thing that I'm watching is the impact on the human form of all of the craziness of New York, the noise levels, the lack of space, the pace that people are walking at, the danger of taxis going past you, you know, all the time. What it does is it makes people aggro and blunt and unsoft and rigid. And, you know, I think that's a really interesting comparison for what happens in businesses, because there are so many reasons for people's central nervous systems to spike in businesses. And I'm dealing with one client now that they have a thing going called active inertia, meaning they're trying hard and they're working hard and they're getting absolutely nowhere. And the reason is that there are so many reasons for people to not act and not change and not transform. And you know, it can be from a failure resistant culture to a lack of trust amongst teammates, or a CEO that they don't follow. There's like a thousand reasons. But when you add all those reasons up, there's a really compelling case for people not to change. And that's why the pathway to change needs so much wisdom that goes beyond just, you know, the metaphor you use, which I think you should share in this podcast right now, John. It's so apt. But there's a, you know, when John does tell you, dear listeners, about this metaphor, what I want you to notice is the difference between the horny teenage boy and the wise sage who's navigating performance. And who's going to do it better? It's going to be the wise sage 99 times out of 100. But maybe you share what you meant by that metaphor, John.
Well, look, I mean, Rowan, I think a couple of things, what you've just said there, wisdom is about change. You know, that the whole point of wisdom is to have memories with no triggers, to move into the future with optimism, into uncertainty and an exploration energy rather than an exploitation energy, which is where we are right now. And I think it's so apt that you're in New York. If you just think about how New York is built, it's built in grids. Like the whole of New York is grid-like living. It's almost very structured. It's very not into the flow. And I often think to myself that at the peak of the Industrial Revolution, there was nowhere better than New York. Why? Because the peak Industrial Revolution required high levels of efficiency with high levels of speed. And now that we are in this new world, that's exactly the opposite of what we need. It's exactly the opposite. It's like it's almost strangling you to move into a space of wisdom and change. Now, the analogy I used comes from my second book, Magnetize, and I had a chapter in there called The Horny Teenage Boy Syndrome. And what I was trying to get across to my readers was the fact that the whole world, business world, Wall Street, are all living a horny teenage boy syndrome aptitude towards the world, because all they want is more. When do they want it? Now? What about tomorrow? Who cares? And it's that short-termism that is really suffering. So we've got the rigidness of New York, and we've got the horny teenage boy syndrome, the emotional not needing to want to change in any way. And so we're sitting with a massive, massive challenge at our hands where people are – I always tell my audiences – I know you honestly are intending to change, but something's stopping you. Like, you really want to, but you just don't know how or what to do, you know? Eric, what are your thoughts?
Well, I want to come back to what you're saying about the big C and small C, Ro. So when you talk about the big C, you're obviously talking about the personal transformation that people go through when they deal with change. If I'm understanding it, you can correct me, by the way. And the small C is the whatever needs to change, right? It's the thing in the external world that needs transformation. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's. I would say the small C is a very transactional, action-driven form of change, and the big C is much more nuanced and brings in all the other stuff that the small C generally excludes, including the things that you mentioned. But it's an entirely different construct of change.
So now you're working with an organization, you're working with like a handful of the top leaders. And the idea is to engage in big C change. Is that so? What does that look like? How do people actually, because, you know, to shift an organization of that size is, what a tremendous effort to get that right. And so obviously there's a lot of the practical things they need to do, but I'm assuming that most of what you guys are doing is trying to let them let go of certain ways of thinking and certain paradigms and make certain emotional shifts, but what does it actually look like?
Yeah, so thank you. It's a very good and generous question. So Eric, it is a very iterative, long-term process. So I'm not going to position it as being easy or quick. As you can imagine, you know, like take an IT system. Changing an IT system from one old offering to a new offering is a massive undertaking. It takes years and millions and millions and millions of dollars. That alone is a tough change process to navigate, let alone an entire organization. So how do you make it a bit easier? Well, in my mind, the hack here is that you've got to get the leaders in their most integrated big self. So just like there's a big form of change and a small form of change, there's a big form of self and a small form of self. And if you're trying to drive change using the small form of self, you're going to get stopped by conflict and fear and all kinds of things that come up when we are in our small self versions. As opposed to the big self version that if a leader gets him or herself into, suddenly there's all the good stuff that's brought to bear, the hope, the generosity, the insights, the vision, the willingness, you know, all of that stuff is what drives change. It's actually sort of the currency of change, I think. So I guess, Eric, it's about getting everyone into their big forms, their big selves. And if you can do that, then the complex process of change becomes a whole lot easier.
Can I push it to go into that even more? Like, so what does a big self look like? What is that? So if we're sitting in a session with you, what does it mean to like access your big self?
Gosh, that is a very, very layered question. And I'd actually love both of your views on this because I think our aggregated view is more valuable than anyone's individual view, particularly my own. So what we do, let me answer this at a practical level. What I'm doing this week is I'm taking leaders to the coalface of other organizations, both business, civil society, governmental, you name it, organizations that have gone through a transformation successfully. And so it's not a heady experience. We're on the subway, we're in buses, we're walking the streets. It's a very at the coalface type of experience where they can see through someone else's eyes how change is well navigated. And that's a very different thing as opposed to coming from me, right? An intellectual view or a consulting view. Nobody wants to listen to a consultant, including myself. And so, you know, we take these people and we show them stories. We show them the grit. We show them the failures, the victories, the hardships, the eventual successful outcome, the messiness of it all. And it's so beautiful because they're not trying to be persuaded of anything. They're just witnessing someone else's big story. And that is a portal. Eric, if you can walk people through that portal of seeing it being accomplished in a profound way by others, suddenly everything's on the table. Everything's possible. And so that would be my quick answer, is you take people out of themselves, out of their habitual selves, so that they can access all of this stuff that's latent in all of us. I firmly believe, my house view is that we are 50% as good as we could be, all human beings. And so there's this journey to the other half of ourselves that I find so compelling, because that's actually where a whole lot of goodness and success and achievement and healing and renewal, that's where all that stuff lies, in our not our lost 50%, but our yet to be realized 50%. And I know you guys both have strong views on that. So I'll pause and let your wisdom come through.
I always want to come back to the idea that watching, I think, is incredibly important. Seeing other people go through it, hear their stories is really important. And I love that, because I haven't really thought about that before. But I'm always to the point of our familiarity machine in our brains, our trigger points, and our unhealed trauma always catches us at the most unexpected places and times. So with all the good intentions that we have to go into this change, we often get caught into old ways of thinking without even realizing we're in this deep set pattern. And I created a program for YPO. They asked me, because I did 2 days with them in a regional event in India, and we did about AI, and they loved it, and it was a really great response, but they asked for something deeper. And I built them a 3-day transformational program where on the first day we would do a magic mushroom ceremony. The second day we would do meditation and AI lectures. The third day, we would AI practicality workshops and breath work. And what I was trying to do there was to try and instill this type of change and integration into their beings, their brains, their behaviors through a subconscious patterning process. And that's why the breaking down of the consciousness with the mushrooms on day one is extended into meditation and breath work throughout the 3 days, so that you can break down old ways of thinking, literally changing the way the brain wires and fires together to be able to engage with something new. So I love watching, and I think it's great, but I think there's something deeper there to think about subconscious repatterning, which most executives, I don't think, have done enough work around trauma healing to look at real change and to bring capital self into the game. So I don't know what your thoughts are around that.
I have a thought, but I'm also aware that Eric had a thought a few minutes ago. Eric, would you like to come in here, or would you like me to answer John's question?
Yeah, well, I think actually what you guys are saying are just different steps in the process. I think what Rowan is speaking about is the catalyst for change, and then what you're speaking about, John, is the repatterning of that change. And when I, I think back to like my physio days often, because it was always such a good, it gave me such a clear picture of how people change and when they don't change. And always one of the big catalysts for change was when catastrophe struck. And the reason why it strikes, because you get to see what's now happened. Like, you know, you've been warned for years, and all of a sudden, like, here's the thing that you've been warned about. It's happened to you. But I think what it really does is, like, now you feel it. Now you feel the consequences of it. And so that really catalyzes you into change. But what I often saw, like in addition to that was people who would share a room with someone who was kind of a bit ahead of them, you know, like I might be suffering with like some sort of lung disease, but the person next to me is like me in the future. When they saw that and they could feel like what that might feel like at some point in the future, I saw some real change come out of that as well. And so I think there really is, there's something really important about getting the emotion first and not being stuck in the head, because the emotion is either going to push you towards change or pull you away from it. And I made this video last week where I spoke about how, like, especially around AI at the moment, you know, I think the big mistake we're all making is we're saying to people, you are going to be replaced by AI, or you're going to be replaced by someone using AI. And essentially all that does is it creates fear. And so, like, if fear is the emotion that you have towards change, what's it going to do? It's going to paralyze you. It's going to push you away from that change. Whereas what I'm hearing you guys doing, Rowan, and what I'm sort of advocating for in the video is that we should have not fear-based call to actions, but possibility-based call to actions or potential-based call to actions, meaning like this is what we could be. This is what you could do. This is what it might be able to do for you in the present. Instead of saying like in the future, if you don't do this, it's going to take you to catastrophe. Like, yes, you know, that might be true, but we can't get scared into change. We need to be inspired into change. And so I think what you guys are doing with that is a beautiful thing to get them to feel the emotion of change as the catalyst for stepping into the action and going through what's going to be a difficult process. I mean, 77,000 people to lead that change effort is huge. And so you really need to be fully bought in as a leader if you are going to see that change and see the resistance that comes with it and keep forging the path forward.
Yeah, I those are great points, Eric. Thank you. The one thing I think is worth highlighting, however, is, you know, as we talk about caring more and starting by going through the emotional portal, there's one dynamic that we have to take into account, which is that in any organization, whether it's a business, an NGO, you name it, there's a battle waging, which is the humans versus the machines. And what happens is that the machine, which is the system, the patterns, the processes in a business, they do not lend themselves for people to find the other half and the better half of themselves. In fact, I'm reading this book at the moment. It's called How the World Really Works. And it's a scientific account of why things are. And basically, one of the takeaways for me is, you know, in the early 1900s, when fossil fuels started being used at scale, a business blueprint, a DNA, was formed. And that was like, how do we get lots of people under one roof producing a lot of stuff quickly? And that DNA is now 125 years old, and it's outdated. And most businesses, I would say 80% plus global businesses, still use that DNA. So what this bank is trying to do, it's actually trying to recreate its blueprint so that it can be a different kind of a business that has a different kind of a future, that has people doing different and better kinds of things. But the system needs to be watched, because it is a case of the humans versus the machine. And that machine can come up and bite the humans easily and over again if it's not taken into account. So that's the dance that I'm really enjoying watching play out here, is how are these humans trying to find their other half against the sort of ever-present threat of the machine that can take all humans down. So that's interesting for me to observe.
You know, to take a whole 70,000 people out of a system and try and build a new blueprint, I almost feel is not going to happen at the pace at which it needs to happen. With the amount of change coming, the pace, the machine's too quick. And what I've always advocated for is having a jet fighter next to your Boeing. It's almost having a team of highly skilled people in futuristic ways of thinking that are solving problems 3 to 5 years ahead of the time based on AI, machine learning, gaming, these new sets of skills that are required for solving these problems in the future. What are your thoughts around this sort of idea that, yes, you're going through this transformation, but do you have somebody looking 3 years ahead, trying to solve those problems while you're moving the Boeing into a new sort of phase?
ShopRite X has done that really well. ShopRite, for the listeners, if you're not,
that's right, they have.
From South Africa, is a very, very impressive, kind of an old school, but a very impressive retailer. And yeah, what's coming out of ShopRite X is just beating all of their competition hands down. And
everybody.
And I think, you know, for one, I guess there was some kind of culture that enabled that. But two, it's run by Neil Schroeder, who's a very impressive business leader. And I'm not sure ShopRite X would have been granted to just anyone. So I think that played a role in it. But yeah, John, in principle, I think it's a great idea. But the truth is, most companies aren't even thinking at that level because they are so mired in the pressure and the fear-based operating of day to day. So even those expansive thoughts, they just, you know, it's just not where people's brains or hearts or intuitions or insights or gut feels just doesn't go there. So you actually have to sort of break the circuit, allow the people to sort of renew themselves. And from that place, you can renew a business. But you're not going to renew a business at the systemic level without taking the humans into account. No way.
Can I shift the conversation for one moment here? And I want to shift it to personal transformation. And I want to ask both of you, what personal transformation or what big change are you currently dealing with in your life or in your business?
Oh boy, how long does this podcast have?
And I'll go third.
Okay, look, John, why don't you go quickly for a change of voice? Then I'll answer. Then Eric can follow. I don't want to dominate this podcast.
You are our guest, you know, so you obviously are here to dominate. I'll be very quick, and it's very quick, and it's very simple, and I figured out the secret. The secret is have a warm, engaging, kind conversation with yourself constantly. And in that process of having a warm, engaging conversation with yourself, the outside world has less of an effect on you. I was recently on a tour. I did a tour of four countries for EO. And the last EO event, apparently some people got triggered by what I said. And I felt 30 seconds of a pang in my stomach. And after that, realized that the warm, engaging conversation I have with myself is exactly that. I'm putting my best foot forward. I'm trying my best. I'm engaging with all parts of myself that maybe I've judged for the longest time. And I played this game called becoming friends with the citizens of your kingdom. And I've created personalities that are sitting inside me. And systematically, I'm becoming friends with each and every one of them. I recently became friends with Marty. His name used to be Marty the Martyr. But now that I've gone over the martyrdom of my own victimhood, now his name has changed to Marty. And so I've got Marty, I've got Juan, I've got Sarah, I've got all of them. I've got this new kingdom inside me and all my citizens are getting along.
Didn't we have Patty as well?
Patty was, who was
Didn't
Patty?
Didn't we name a Patty?
Yeah, I remember this. Patty, wasn't there Patty? Patty the Petty. Wasn't Patty the, I can't remember. Anyway, I think ultimately personal development, it always arrives at the same place. Are you having a kind, warm, engaging conversation with yourself? And in that space, anything becomes possible. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment, Rowan.
I'll follow on from that. Eric, to answer your question directly, what I'm trying to manifest or grow in myself is this ability to live and exist in a devotional way. I've sought a softer version and a softer way of living for myself for many, many years, quite elusively. But, you know, the current thing that I'm aspiring to is to show up in a devotional way, meaning a certain, you know, it's slower, it's gentler, it's more insightful, it's more wise. It's just cutting away some of the overly ambitious, hard pushing parts of me that no longer serve me.
And I think Eric's asking this question because Eric had a phenomenal weekend, a massive shift, a huge exploration into your own subconscious that you did this weekend. And I think the question is very poignant where are you coming from. If you want to ask Rowan another question, but I'm really interested in you sharing some of your experience. And I think we'll do a whole podcast on it when eventually you've integrated it. But tell us a little bit about what went on for you this weekend and where you were at with that.
Yeah. I think, like you said, maybe there's a time where I want to go into a lot more detail, but I think definitely, so over the weekend, spent a full day doing some very deep personal development. And I think what came out of that for me at the end was just a level of groundedness that I've never really experienced, and a level of wholeness and completedness and contentment that I'm squaring off with a lot of the ambition and the aspirations that I have. But I think what I'm trying to do at the moment is just I'm trying to live into and capture what I experienced over the weekend and continuously find that space in me over and over and over again. And there's still a lot of integration that needs to happen. There's still a lot of unpacking that I think that needs to happen. But it's incredible what you can find in yourself. And I think it's also incredible how easy you can lose what you find in yourself. And so to have the practice to come back to that place, whatever that might be for you, I think it's important to cultivate that. And that's where my head is at the moment. So how can I just cultivate and cultivate and embed until you no longer think about that? It's just so deeply embedded that it's just natural in how you show up.
It doesn't make sense. It's too broad. Not diving into it. You just broad stroke the shit out of that.
I'm skimming it. It made sense. Rowan, did it make sense to you at some level?
Yeah, it does, because personal development is highly iterative and non-linear. So it just, you know, it happens in these little funny moments, and sometimes big moments, and then no moments for a while, and then 10 moments in a day. You know, that's the nature of it. And I'll give another spin on this. I had a birthday party. I invited my 10 best friends over. And at the end of dinner, I said to them, I'd like a gift from each of you. And at which point they all started patting their pockets because they'd bought nothing. But I didn't mean that type of gift. I meant, what have you observed in me that you would like to share with me? Either, you know, affirmative or critical, doesn't matter. And my best friend said, just stop doing all this personal development work. And it was quite interesting because it was a good reminder that it also can be a little bit addictive, a little bit too much. And there's a time just to let the process, you know, unfold in its own way and not push it forward. And that's one of the things that I'm learning in my devotional way, is patience and forgiveness and just letting things emerge in the way that's natural, as opposed to forcing an agenda or pushing my expectations onto the world.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I have a group of friends and all they do all the time is from one workshop to another workshop to another workshop. And I'm like, guys, at what stage are you going to go, okay, you know what? I'm actually fine. Let's go and do something. Let's go windsurfing. Let's go walk around Istanbul. Let's not have to do another meditation retreat. And I think we're also getting to a point where we've done the hard swimming. And now you can start to let that momentum ride itself out. And you've got some momentum because you've done so much work already, Rowan. And I feel exactly the same way. It's like it's almost overbearing when people are constantly talking about that sort of thing. And you know what? I was 100% guilty of that for many, many years. And I've gotten to that stage where when you are having a kind conversation with yourself, there's actually nothing left to do. Just to be, just like be in that space and enjoy that space and the space that you've cultivated for yourself. So I agree with your friend, your best friend, wholeheartedly.
I have one other idea, Eric. I just want to make sure that you don't want to come into the conversation, but just maybe a concept to share that was shared with me a couple of weeks ago is this idea of a master pattern playing out. And the master pattern plays out in a marriage, in an individual, in a business, in any kind of institution. And it's playing out all the time if you give yourself a chance to see it and notice it and work with it. And what this master pattern is doing is it's constantly pushing toward coherence. Everything wants to be in a coherence naturally. But we get in the way, you know, we stop the coherence or block it or course correct it. And so I think anyone listening now, the invitation I would say is try to spot your master pattern and just help with getting that coherent with itself. And so for me, my master pattern is about less ambition, more gentleness, more kindness. That's the essential person that I am, that I'm trying to re-uncover. And so that's my master patterns toward doing less, toward being more insightful, a softer touch. And I'm just trying to help with that coherence all the time. And sometimes I have good days and sometimes I have bad days. But I thought that might be a useful construct for your listeners to think about.
A few years ago, my word of the year was symbiosis. And it was exactly that. Is that how do I find more symbiosis with myself and with the goals and with everything that I have out there? And I keep coming back to Tao Te Ching. One of the 81 verses he has in there is called Ambition, the Game of the Fool. And it's exactly that. It's like it's a foolish game, you know. It's this constant never there, you know. I'm not rich enough. I'm not lean enough. I'm not successful enough. It's just constant reiteration of that negative bias that we have towards where we are in the world. So yeah, finding peace with that is the ultimate idea here, you know. Eric, thoughts?
Yeah, maybe just for us also in closing is that I'm doing a workshop tomorrow called How to Build a High Performance Team in 2024. I've been running this, actually not a workshop, a webinar. I've been running this a few times now. And one of the slides I have in there is to tell leaders, like, you have to choose your approach to change at the end of the day. And how many leaders, like there are two approaches, really. One is the sledgehammer approach, which is one we love to go for, which is that if things start like falling apart in our team, and what we do is we organize a workshop. And what we do in that workshop for that day or, you know, the offsite day or 2 days is we try and brute force change. And we try and deal with as much change as possible. And of course, we know that typically doesn't work. Like you'll try and brute force it. You'll get back to the office on Monday. Reactivity, like chaos, you know, lots of things happening and change just starts to fall away. So I say to them all, that's one option is you can try and brute force change. The other option is that instead of the sledgehammer approach, you take a lockpick approach. And the lockpick approach, like, you know, every discipline has its own little saying. In lockpicking, there's actually like a little saying they have as well, which is feel, don't force. And obviously with a lockpick, like it takes time, you know, you're patient. And you're feeling your way, and like as those little like teeth unlock inside the mechanism, eventually you get to the big unlock. And that's actually like that's a much more patient, thoughtful, mindful approach to change. And definitely the one that's going to be more successful because you can't just hope that change is going to happen overnight. And we know this intuitively, obviously, and we also see this in practice all the time. And that was also maybe one of my biggest takeaways for the weekend. It's like, whether you're dealing with personal change or organizational change, it's the same. And I think it's maybe a nice sort of encapsulation of what we spoke about today, which is feel, don't force. That is where change ultimately comes from. And the harder we try and force it, the less it's going to happen. The more resistance you're going to create internally, externally, and the harder you're going to fight against it. So those are some of my closing thoughts, gents.
Yeah, I'll just add one thing to that, which is just to finish the thought I posed before your comments, which is that if you feel and you feel well and you feel insightfully and you feel in an honest, real way, you might feel that you or the organization is actually not ready for change because there's a natural timing to it. And to force it through when the change isn't part of that coherence is a massively dangerous and expensive thing. And it would be very wise for some organizations to say, actually, we're going to fold this hand now. We're not ready for change. There's other stuff that we need to do before we can even contemplate change. Let's go and do that. And that for me is coherence playing out. But there's very, very few business people who have that sense of in-tunedness with their business or their team.
Or the courage.
Yeah, or the courage.
Mm.
Well, you know, it's both exciting and like swimming upstream, doing what we're doing, but we love it. And thank goodness we are in the position to be able to do it. Eric is on his way to Bali. Rowan is in New York. I'm on my way to Dubai, and I'm in Cape Town. So we get to do this on a world stage, lucky us. And we see it from so many different perspectives. And the more perspectives I see it from, the more I realize that all humans want the same thing. You know, I was in Geneva, Chamonix, Istanbul, Zambia. All humans want the same thing. They want more peace, more contentment, more achievement, more ability to change. And that's really what the podcast is all about, is how do we become better, change, and live more expansive lives. Rowan, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. Your wisdom is always really well appreciated. Eric, your broad strokes about the weekend were pathetic. And I hope that next week we'll have better, more insightful ways of you sharing. But I'm out. And thanks so much, Rowan.
Okay, thank you for having me. I loved seeing you both. I feel like we can talk for hours here. So hopefully it's been useful for your listeners. A few snippets or a few gems in there. I think maybe a couple were uncovered. So thank you both.